This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome to Pick a Tale. Today we've got some very interesting stories. I hope you like the first one, which is Meg and Mog. Meg and Mog are very famous in the books of stories. They were written by Helen Nicol and Jan Panowski illustrated them. So it's really all about a black cat. And the black cat is owned by a very, very unusual person called Meg. She's unusual because she has a pointy hat and sometimes flies around on a broomstick. I think you might guess what kind of person she might be. Anyway, this is how the story goes. It was Monday morning. "I would like some breakfast," said Mog the cat. "Wait, I've just made Al some lunch. Some lovely bat apps. On Tuesday, I will make him a beetle burger. On Wednesday, a mouse roll. On Thursday, some house mouse samosa. And on Friday, maybe a nice hot frog." "Oh," said the cat, "I would quite like my lunch to be made by that. Perhaps I could have a lunch box and you could put something different in it each day." "What a great idea," said Meg. "I'll make you a lunch box." So she put in 3 bits of wood, best butter, some nails, some fly's eyes, and she went abracadabra, 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 and whoosh, bang, thud, there was a lunchbox, bright red with yellow corners. "Oh, how beautiful," said Mog the cat. "It looks great to me. Well, I can put something in it on each day of the week, just like I do Owl." Mog opened the box. "What's in it?" said Owl. "Is it yummy?" "I don't know," said Mog. "It's green. Oh dear, it might have gone bad. It's furry. Oh dear, it must be mouldy. I think it might be moving. Oh dear." And you'll never guess. It was a bright green caterpillar. "Poor little thing, it's very hungry." "So am I," said the cat. "Would you like some of my breakfast?" said the owl. "Not really," said the cat. Meg searched high and low. "Ah, now I've got to feed 3 people, an owl, a cat and a caterpillar. I don't know what anybody likes these days. I think caterpillars like green things." So the caterpillar grew bigger and bigger on all the green leaves that everybody bought for him. "Oh, well, maybe one day he'll be a very happy caterpillar and stop eating all this food." "It's getting a bit chilly," said the cat and the owl together. "I think winter might be coming." Meg managed to get a very large sprig of blossom for the caterpillar to sit on. And then, out of the blue, just when they were about to sit down from breakfast, the caterpillar turned into a beautiful butterfly. "Oh, well, that was a very good thing to do," said Meg. "But you still haven't given me a lunchbox," said Mog. "Well," said the owl to his friend, "you can share mine." "That's a good idea," said Meg. "I'm not very good at making lunchboxes after all." And so they all sat round Owl's lunchbox and everybody found something nice to eat. Thank you for listening to Pick a Tale today. I hope you like that funny little story. I wonder what you put in your lunchbox when you go to school. Our next bear story is about a real bear, a polar bear, large and white, with a cub. Lasker, the polar bear, is big enough to leave the den where he was born for the first time, he's allowed to play outside in the soft snow. Soon, Laska's mother is hungry, and it's time to go towards the sea for food. Laska rides high on her back, gripping her fur to make sure she doesn't fall off. While her mother is busy eating, Laska wanders off, stands on high hind legs, tall as it can be, to look over the Arctic Sea. But without looking down, and with a sudden crack, the ice breaks, and a small ice floe carries Laska away from the land. He's far too young to be able to swim yet. He doesn't know what to do. He makes a funny whimpering sound for his mother, but she's so busy fishing, she doesn't quite see or hear him. Then, with a great big gulp, he cries out. She looks up. Oh no, where is my baby cub? Bravely, she leaps across the gap towards the bear cub. But it's really too far. Paws slither on the icy shore. But there's a large chunk of ice just coming down the stream of sea. If I can get on that, she thinks, I'll be able to reach him. But further and further away, the little cub slips and slides, looking at his mother disappearing. Then the mother has an idea. She takes a big leap onto a large piece of ice, which is much closer. She walks carefully so it doesn't crack. And suddenly, just as all is lost, the water seems to pick her up and rush her on a big, big wave. She comes really close to the little cub, all on its own, grabs it with her big paw and hauls it, but slips. Oh no, the little cub is dropped into the water. But it's okay. Laska is safe because her big paws stretch out and she takes him carefully up and puts him in her jaws. He's very, very wet. Oh no, will he be okay? The large bear goes slowly over one big sleet of ice and then onto the other and finally leaps onto the land. The sun comes up just right. She cuddles and tosses and makes the little cub bear so warm. Oh, they're on firm land again. Oh dear, I will never wander away from my mother again, says Laska to himself. Laska's hurried too. He wants to make sure that he's close to his mother, so he snuggles in tight and closes his eyes. Mother Bear dreams of a large piece of fish, which she knows tomorrow she will catch. But this time she will make sure that the bear stays on land and makes sure that her cub is watched over by her friends when they come down to the sea to fish again. Did you know that large Arctic bears eat fish? I was wondering whether you did. Well, now you know they do. And if they can, they like to eat salmon. Well, that was another little story, but this time it was about a real bear. Our next few stories are going to be about toy teddy bears. And one of them is going to be quite funny. It's a mixture of a real bear who meets another bear. So I hope you're going to enjoy that story too. Thank you for listening to Pick a Tale today. Welcome to Pick a Tale. One of the most famous children's writers, Hans Christian Andersen from Denmark, wrote incredible fairy tales like The Ugly Duckling and The Little Mermaids. This is another really famous one of his. He was a very clever man. Not only could he tell stories to children, all that he'd made up from inside his head, but he would take pieces of paper and as he told them, he would cut the whole story out. And when it had finished, he would open up the paper and it was all joined together. Can you imagine such a wonderful thing when you had someone like that telling you stories? This is a very famous one called The Princess and the Pea. It's an adapted one and it's very funny. It was a very cold, blustery, wintry night. And out of the blue, there was a knock on the door of a large, beautiful palace. The prince's servant opened it. "Now, how can I help you?" There was a young girl who had been lost in the storm. "I need some shelter for the night, please." The wind howled, thunder crashed, lightning flashed, and rain had poured down in torrents. And in the middle of the storm, there this young girl had sought refuge. "Well, look at that," said the servants of the king. "This poor girl must come in. We will give you some hot, warm drinks and dry clothes." She came inside. Her toes of her shoes were absolutely soaked. The fierce storm had treated her very badly. "Now," said the king and queen, "we'll find you a nice warm bed, and in the morning, when the sun comes up, we will take you in a coach back to where you live." "That's so kind. I'm actually a princess," she said. "I come from another kingdom. My coach broke down, and my coachman disappeared, and I saw the lights of your castle. I knew you would help me."
"How do we know she's a princess?" said the queen to the king in another room. "I don't think she could be a princess. Look how badly she was dressed."
But the king pointed out she had been in a storm. "However can we prove she's a princess?" Now the king and queen had been seeking a princess because their son, the prince, would soon become king and he needed a queen. And to be a queen, well, you had to be a princess first.
"I know, I've got an idea," said the queen. "If she is truly a princess, she will have to sleep on a very comfortable bed. Now, she'll know if the bed is not comfortable because she'll wake up. I've got an idea." So the queen went and got a pea, an old dry pea, rather like a stone. She put it on the bed and instead of one mattress, she put 20 mattresses on top. And everyone had an eiderdown, which is a bit like a duvet cover, and every one of them was beautifully decorated. And they placed the pea that had been in the Royal Museum for a very long time. Nobody really knows why, but it had. They took it out of a glass case because there was a story once that said if you want to prove a person is a princess, you only have to put a pea under their mattress. Well, they didn't put it under one, did they? They put it under a lot. Now, there was a ladder needed for the princess to climb. She had never seen such a bed like it in her entire life. She could almost touch the ceiling. "How very strange this castle is," and the king and the queen. "I can't wait to leave the morning and get back to my own." She climbed up the ladder and she tried to sleep. She tossed this way and that way. She tossed this way and that way until the lark had gone. Oh, the moon disappeared. The moon went down, in fact, and the sun came up and she still hadn't slept. She was so exhausted. She climbed down the ladder and just wanted to go home. She got dressed and came out and everyone was in the kitchen having breakfast, except the king and queen, of course, because they have their own room. The maids and the servants said, "Oh, my goodness, you don't look like you've slept at all." "I haven't," said the princess. "I haven't. I'm a princess. I'm used to a really comfortable bed. Even though there are all those mattresses, I've never slept a week, and I've never slept on such an uncomfortable bed in my entire life.
Ha-ha, said the head of the servants.
He rushed to the king and said, she didn't sleep. Oh, my, said the queen, she must be a princess, because a princess could never sleep on top of a pea, even though there were 20 mattresses on top of it. Ah, oh, said the king. Ah, oh, said the queen. We will invite her to our dining room, and she will have breakfast with us. So the servant went and took the young princess to the king and queen's dining room, and they sat down to large bowls of porridge and toast and honey and lots of lovely warm milk.
I'm so sorry, my dear, that you didn't sleep very well.
Now, tell us a little bit about your parents and their kingdom, and tell us a little bit more about how long they have been there. You see, we have a son who's a prince, and it's time for him to become king. And you see, said the queen, we really, really do need to find a princess for him.
Oh, said the princess, rather interested.
Well, I'd like to have a look around your castle first. I could tell you about mine. We have lots of gold and silver. My father is a very rich person.
Oh, said the queen, how lovely.
And exactly where is your kingdom?
Ah, she said, now that the storm has gone, I think if we climbed up to the very top of your castle and you looked out through the clouds, you could see the very top of mine. You see, we have one of the largest in the kingdom. And at that point, the young prince arrived.
I saw your coach on the side of the road. You must have had a terrible time in that storm, he said.
I did, said the princess, and I didn't sleep a wink last night.
And the queen told him the whole story.
Well, he said, if you're not too tired, I'll get out the horses and we could have a ride around our kingdom. By that time, your coach will be fixed and we can take you home.
Thank you, said the princess. And that's exactly what happened. But you know, that's not the end of the story, because the prince and princess became great friends. And as they grew up, they did more and more together. The king of the prince got very old and said it was time for the prince to become the king. And so the prince, without any hesitation, asked his new friend, the princess, if she would become his queen. And of course, she said yes, as long as she didn't have to sleep on top of a pea with 20 mattresses on top of it. There, that's a very funny story, isn't it? I hope you enjoyed it, though. Thank you so much for listening to Pick a Tale today.
Welcome to Pick a Tale. This story is called Treasure Deep, and it's written by our wonderful David Hill. He wrote the story a long time ago for school journals. In fact, I realise it's probably 20 years ago that he wrote this. But David Hill is still writing the most amazing books, and he's highly regarded as one of our best New Zealand writers. And we're so lucky because he lives here in Taranaki, in New Plymouth. And this is how this story goes, and I think you'll know some of the places that he mentions. Kia ora to my brother Tama, where he lives by the Waiwakaio River. Here are words from your sister Meritini. I send greetings from Kurupa, between the mountain of Taranaki and the sea, the pā that our Atiawa won in a battle many years ago. I tell you of a loss. My matua, carved by our grandfather from Pohuhamu, brought from the south, the treasure I carried everywhere, has disappeared. I was playing with other girls by the riverbed below the pā. We were on a swing bridge, out over the water, on the flax ropes, and dropping down into the cool green. And sometimes, I know not when,
My mat was slipped from my waistband. I felt so sad. We searched everywhere along the riverbank, but we couldn't find it. We even dived into the water, but it's gone. My dear mother comforted me and said someday it will return. So I ask these words be said to you, my brother. Help ease the loss of my Tonga. And then David writes this wonderful letter. This time, this letter is set in 1879, and it's in Orakura. Dear William, I write to you from our farm near the village of Orakura. The name is a Maori word, the Maori being the people who were here before we came, meaning flaming sunsets. Indeed, the sun does burn it away down into the sea, turning Mount Taranaki behind us to a glowing red. The red reminds Mother of the blood that was sometimes spilt here. Peace is here now. We all work together. My friend is a boy called Rawiri. His father and mine farm together. Rawiri lives in a kind of fortified village called a pā on the Uakura River. It has terraces made from huge stones. Sadly, last week when I was with Rawiri on the little beach by the river, I lost my knife, the one your family gave me before we sailed for New Zealand, from England. We've searched everywhere, but we cannot find it. I thought that maybe you might know how I could look at it and find it again. I guess I could earn money by getting up early and milking cows. I guess by the time the ship carries this letter crosses the ocean to England, the year will be nearly over. How wide the world is. I like living in Uakura, New Zealand. Uakura, New Zealand, Taranaki, 12th of November, 1915. Dear little Tiara, how is Wellington? Has Uncle Peter gone a motor car yet? On Sunday, Nanny Miro took my friend Jane and me to Kurupa. Remember once we went there? It's where our whānau used to live, about 3 miles up towards the mountain. But nobody lives there now. Trees are grown everywhere. It's a long time ago. We went to the pā site and Nanny could say a karakia, which is a prayer for all the people who are now fighting in France in the war. Jane and I said prayers too, and then we played down by the river while she sat near where her whare once stood. When we got home, I found I'd lost my peg doll. It was the one that Dad had carved for me from a clothes peg, and Mum had dressed it up. It must have dropped out of my pocket somewhere. Nanny Miro said not to worry. It was the best place to lose something, which I wasn't quite sure what she meant. I'm looking for it. And then it was time for us to have a picnic. I love to see you again from your cousin Marama. 1952, 22nd of April. Dear cousin Helen, this is the first letter I've sent by airmail. It's hard to believe it will take 5 days only to reach England. Autumn is here, which means we're not milking. Our cows are dry. Dad says we'll turn them loose this winter in the bush on Mount Taranaki. It's not far from here, and we can see it. And sometimes it's covered in snow. I've been helping lots on the farm lately. Yesterday I rounded up some cows from a paddock down by the river, all by myself. I like it. I wish you could see it. On the other side of the river, there used to be a famous Maori pā with big terraces, but nobody lives there now. Instead, there's lots of tall trees. Rewa, I think. Anyway, sometimes the cows are very naughty and escape and go down to drink there. But we don't want them by the river because they could make it dirty. So I make sure that they can't get down. I would be worried as well that they could get lost. Dad says the pā is still a special place for people and we should show respect to it at all times. And we definitely shouldn't let any animals out through the gate or across the fields or even through the fences. Pā said that he learnt about Maori ways from his grandfather, Albert, who had lots of friends when he was at school. I've got to go. I've got to chop wood. P.
peel potatoes and get silverbeet from the garden. I wish you could be here. Goodbye. Lots of love from Margaret. By the way, I forgot to tell you that I lost a magnifying glass that you sent me. Could you get me another one and send it instead? From Tama at extra.co.nz. Email, 1st of March 2007. Hi, Cuz. Thought I'd drop you an email with some news. It seems incredible that I can contact you almost within minutes of writing, whereas in the old days there were no letters that would take any more than, say, 5 or 6 days. Before that, do you know, they took at least 6 weeks, if not 2 months. And before even that, well, they hardly ever got sent anywhere. But people would just hope that somehow news would travel from one country to another. A lot of people in the past had come from England. Anyway, I thought I'd drop you an email with some news. Remember swimming in the river at Kurupa last summer? Some guys from the museum in New Plymouth had been there, videoing big stone terraces. They also said there were small trenches in a couple of places. Before they started, Dad said some blessings, and the great-great-nanny Marama taught him. Remember her, Nanny Mira, our great-great-great-whatever? They grew up here. They know all about this place. The amazing thing is the museum people dug one of their trenches down into the sand by the river. And they found all sorts of stuff buried there. And they're going to take it to the museum and clean it up. There was this rusty pocket knife, a little wooden doll, looked like it had been carved, and a magnifying glass. But the most awesome thing was a fish hook made of punamu. Dad said people must have lived here and lost them over time. It was really quite creepy. But wasn't it amazing that they were found? Kurupa is very special, I think. Well, I hope one day you can come back for a holiday. Just to let you know that while I was watching, I must have put my cell phone down somewhere because now I can't find it. I guess it'll turn up sometime. Maybe by a museum piece or museum people, or maybe something out of the blue, something electronic like a robot might find it. Who knows? But these things at the museum say that some of them are well over 100 years old. Thank you for listening to Pick a Tale today. And some of the stories about our local place are always interesting, aren't they? I think we always lose things, but it's amazing how somehow they can always turn up again.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.